I see the museum as this community hub. I want us to go in this direction where history, enrichment, education, art, that's accessible and open for us because it gives enrichment to our lives. It helps with creative thinking, but it also gives you a context of like looking back from the past to what we're doing in the future.
Thanks for joining us on Louisiana's Playground Podcast, your roadmap to all things Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm Brady Raynard.
And I'm Jillian Corder, and we're excited to bring you another episode here of the podcast with the authentic stories and experiences of all of Southwest Louisiana. We've got all the tools you need to build your own personal Lake Charles itinerary.
Episode 76, upcoming. Imperial Calcasieu Museum, a great conversation with Ashley Royer there, mm-hmm. representing ICM. A really cool history piece, if you will, combined with the arts as well. It's a nice combination of both of those things together, and ICM does a great job giving an outlet to both here in the area.
They are a gem to this area.
Ooh,
for
I like
sure.
that.
So we're going to begin the show as we always do.
With another gem?
Another gem.
Yeah.
We're going to begin it with On V Eats.
And just to be clear, the gem is the On V Eats restaurant, not the On V Eats segment, although it is a gem in my heart.
Why not both?
Why not both? I like that. We head to 20's Terrific Treats, which is conveniently actually just across the street from the Imperial Calcasieu Museum.
Yeah, so head over to the museum, check out an exhibit, and then walk over for a cookie? A
couple
cookies. No, you can't have a couple of cookies. They're so big. Like, you can have, like, maybe two, and that's it. Like, you got to cut yourself off.
You're not lying. Antoine is his name. That's who owns that. He is 20.
He is 20.
Has created it a few years ago and has really taken off. I mean, they've really become very quickly a staple in Lake Charles, one of the go-to sweets spots that we have. And it all really started with those chocolate chip cookies that they have.
Yeah. I mean, I love his story so much. He's just, you know, worked out of his own kitchen and
self-made,
you know, and it speaks to the how wonderful the product is when you can go from just like selling something on Facebook to having a storefront like this that is so incredibly popular and has so quickly, in just a couple of years, become just a staple for this entire town.
So you had the chocolate chip cookie. Explain it for our people.
How do I put it into words? So first of all, these are like really thick cookies. I wish I could show you the visual.
Like 2 inches tall almost?
Yes, like an inch and a half, a good inch and a half tall. And big giant cookies. I don't know how he gets the height on them. There's a secret to that, I'm sure, but they're just amazing. He makes them into perfect circle, like in perfect spheres, if you will, balls to bake them. And then they come out with this perfect height on them. They're really, really good. So many chocolate chips.
So many.
I don't know how he does that. I don't know what his chocolate chip to dough ratio is.
If the standard's like 25%, this is at like 75%.
I'm a fan. That's all I can say is like, I'm a fan. When you like crack one of these babies open, it's like it feels like a full candy bar, right?
Fair.
Like inside it. And they're actually really good to share because they're so big that like split it, right? Like you can split a cookie.
You got to be hangry to be able to knock out
like
a whole cookie.
To knock out a whole one. Now, have I done it? Of course, obviously.
Yeah, I mean,
but
you're not a rookie.
Yeah, I'm not a rookie. I've been here before. It's not my first cookie. But really, really, really good. And somehow, even though it's packed with chocolate chips, it's not to me overly sweet. Like you can still have that like sugar rush that's not good. You know, too much. This isn't it. This is really good. It's incredible. And what I love the most, they are consistent. You can go there any day of the week, any time of the year. You ask for a chocolate chip cookie, you know exactly what you're going to get. To me, because of that and the overall flavor, this is the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had. Boom.
Pound for pound. The pound for pound champion.
It's like this is
the heavyweight champion. I mean, literally heavyweight, because you're probably not going to find a heavier chocolate chip cookie.
No, but like this is the chocolate chip cookie. Like the all capital letters.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that means a lot.
Yeah, because I am a lover of cookies. So.
Well, look, we'll talk more cookies here in just a second. They also have branched out since opening the storefront. They do a variety of different treats. I also tried the cookies and cream cinnamon roll. I'm not going to spend too much time with this one because it tasted like an awesome cinnamon roll. So you know that flavor, right? If you know cinnamon rolls, that perfect cinnamon roll with a nice creamy top. Yeah. And imagine this one had Oreos kind of over the top. So that nice chocolate cookie crumble on top. So it just kind of combined those two flavors. Very, very good. They also do bread pudding, which, as you know, this is a bread pudding podcast. I don't have to sit and tell you. And theirs is a little bit different than most.
Yeah.
The top is very crispy, but a very creamy, creamy interior. Like
almost
so soft it's creamy.
Yeah, like the moisture is all on the inside.
It's sweet. There's a rich, deep flavor with it. It's very milky. It's got some nutty flavors with some of the pecans that they added, but there's no like sauce on the top like some of them have because they don't really need it with how—
It's like baked into it, basically.
Essentially. And honestly, the flavor is not as much traditional as it is to me, almost a donut flavor. You know, I know you had a few bites of it as well.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah. And I'm not sure, the pecans in it look really excellent choice.
I agree. I'm not normally a pecan guy. Not that I like dislike them. It's just, it's one of my least favorite nuts.
Yeah, I love pecans, but I really like them in this dish specifically because I feel like, you know, with bread pudding, it, for lack of a better word, it's like soggy, right? In a good way. That's what it's supposed to be. So it's being incredibly moist, like a pudding. And this just added that crunch that you really need in it. I liked it like a lot.
The kids liked it too. I brought home the little bit that I had left over, and Philip essentially was a bread pudding vacuum.
Yeah.
Chose this one. Like, look, that's how I know I'm raising him right. I gave him the option of a cinnamon roll, of cheesecake or bread pudding, and he said, I'll have the bread pudding.
Well, he knows.
He's at 4 years old, he's already—
like father, like son.
He already knows. in addition, there was also the cheesecake, as I mentioned. It's a blueberry lemon. And so this was a very, very good cheesecake. And in fact, I think as good as all of their other stuff are, I think the cheesecake to me gets my top marks for how good they are. It's thick, thick, thick with a blueberry compote on top.
Yeah.
But despite it being really thick, it's not very dense.
No, it's like whipped.
It's a very light cheesecake because, you know, cheesecake come in a lot of different shapes and sizes. Some of them are much more thicker, and it's almost like cutting a block of cheese almost.
Yeah,
it's so thick.
Yeah.
This one, not so much on that end. Heavy, heavy lemon flavor in the cake, and then it paired really well with the blueberries on top. It was sweet, and it had some crunchy from the crust. The crust is very, very good, so creamy. And so overall, just— – it was a very flavor-packed cheesecake.
Yeah. Okay, so take that. And they've never done cheesecake wrong, right?
Right.
Like, just any one you get, it's going to be good. But take that blueberry lemon cheesecake and turn it into a cookie. And I had that.
I'm in.
Okay. So it's, I don't know, I guess essentially a sugar cookie with blueberries in it. Like, that, the classic blueberry cookie, it was very good.
Okay.
And it wasn't overly sweet. And then this zesty, lemony icing
it's
on
very
top.
And the cake was very zesty
like
as well.
That's the
I like
best
that.
Way. It's this yes, I know I'm eating a cookie and let's not talk about calories, but like it feels refreshing while you're eating it. It doesn't feel heavy, even though
it's the power of the lemon
physically
cookie.
Physically is heavy.
Look, that's the power of lemon desserts.
Yeah, lemon desserts make you feel like you're doing something healthy.
It's like an exercise.
It's
you essentially just exercise.
That's what
that
I'm gonna keep telling myself. But I ate this one and I ate almost all of it.
It's worth a glass of water.
I shared a bite with someone else, and then I was like, but
that was a mistake.
I want the rest of it. The chocolate chip cookie, I only gave away two bites to two people, so I like to keep it all for myself. They're just really good. Twani's never done anything wrong for me.
And that's
consistency.
And as I said, the location, too, is really convenient, especially compared to our interview guest today at the Imperial Calcasieu Museum, right there across the street, and just— it's still technically downtown, but on the southern end of what would be classified as downtown.
Super convenient.
From a great meal to a great guest, we welcome on Ashley Royer, the creative director of the Imperial Calcasieu Museum. She's a proud McNeese graduate and an accomplished local artist, bringing a deep passion for both art and history to her work. And she's also dedicated to enriching the community by creating opportunities for connection, creativity, and cultural exploration. Welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
So, Ashley, Southwest Louisiana, of course, you know, known for our big city amenities and small town charm, which makes for, you know, just a vast array of experiences that we have to offer people. So we like to find out how each of our guests plays in Louisiana's playground. So we've got some rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Crawfish or gumbo?
Oh, gumbo.
Okay.
Brown gumbo.
Is there another?
Green gumbo.
Yes. I mean, gumbo's herbs. But that's more popular in the New Orleans area than it is here.
Yeah.
I've never had a gumbo that wasn't a shade of brown.
Oh, green gumbo has like okra, chicken, seafood.
That's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nope.
It's a lot of greens.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. That's why I've never had it, because no thank you on okra. Like, not even interested.
But then you haven't had a good okra gumbo.
Maybe not.
I agree with it, but
maybe I'm not ordering from the right places. Okay, yep. But for you, brown.
Brown gumbo.
Okay, got it. Okay, next question, poolside or beachside?
Beachside.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I love shell picking. I love exploring the coast. I love the animals and the critters that run around on the beach.
There's nowhere better to find shells than here in Southwest Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Holly Beach.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I thought you were going to say there's nowhere better to find shells than the beach. And I was going to say, yeah, I think you might be right.
might be onto something.
You know what? Styx in the forest, the number one place to
number
find
Number one place to find that. All right. Last question here. Concert or comedy show?
Comedy show.
Okay.
We don't get a lot of those. I like that. Why? Yeah.
I just grew up loving comedians. Mm-hmm. Just something we would memorize all the jokes and just go back and forth with it. And I have not been to a lot of concerts.
Who do you find yourself quoting the most, comedian-wise? Go ahead.
Bill Engvall.
Oh, that's good. Okay, that's a good one. That's not what I was going to guess, but all right.
I also like Jeff Foxworthy. I like Gabriel Iglesias.
Yeah?
A couple.
Okay. Our ages are all the same, aren't they?
I think so.
I'm feeling some closeness in age here based on comedians that we like, for sure. We're a Mitch Hedberg family.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a few.
Some good ones.
Yeah. So let's get into our talk about the Imperial Calgary Museum and your role there. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And then what do you feel like the museum ultimately really means to this community?
Yes. So I am the creative director at the Imperial Calgary Museum. So I'm responsible for a lot of the storytelling, the content that's going to go into the exhibits, the artists that we're pulling in. So programming, what are you going to see when you come in there? What's the conversation we're sharing? And I see the museum as this community hub. I want us to go in this direction where history, enrichment, education, art, that's accessible and open for us because it gives, you know, it gives enrichment to our lives. It helps with creative thinking, but it also gives you a context of like looking back from the past to what we're doing in the future. It just gives you that view of our life.
There really is something to that, not knowing where you're going until you know where you've been.
Yes.
Thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's like a great purpose that you guys serve.
I love it. I love it. And I was not a history nerd until I hit the doors of the museum.
Really?
Yes. Just give me a room stacked full of papers. And once I started reading, I was hooked. Like, it was like hard love instantly.
What's some of the most interesting things that you've been able to learn about this area and put on display?
So one of the things I've really, really loved is just learning about the entire richness of diversity that came through Southwest Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And folding that into all of the exhibits has been a really big passion, because we are more than just Spanish and French. There's so much more to hear.
And that's what I love, too, especially like I think I really started learning that a lot when I started researching gumbo. And you realize that gumbo is the perfect, I guess, ending product of like something that we create that grabs all of those different diverse people that have been through here. And gumbo took, you know, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, and then created, to me, the most perfect product in the world.
That's why it's like the best metaphor for the area too, right?
It really is.
I really think so.
Together, we are the perfect meal.
And so it I like it. That's great.
Cthulhu approves.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how do you take that? What you're learning, what you're digging into, and how does Imperial Calgary Museum serve to be kind of that living archive?
So one of the struggles I came into was having to rebuild exhibits after Hurricane Laura. Mm-hmm. Everything is being rebuilt, even actively now. And so I feel like the information we have, I've hit so many paywalls trying to research history information, and I'm trying to remove that barrier for our viewers. So when you come in, you're not having to pay for an archive subscription. You're not having to pay for newspaper subscriptions. You're getting access to this, mm-hmm. and you can research it and have fun. And I feel like just having that available is, I mean, a significant improvement.
Yeah.
I like that you brought that up. It does feel like so much of what we're doing, we're in a subscription mm-hmm. consciousness, I guess you would look at it, with where we're at in the world. And yet our history should be something that is available for all of us to be able to see without saying, oh, but it'll cost you.
Yes. We just in the last couple of years, we lost a company in town stopped paying its subscription for our newspaper archives, for our historical periodics. I mean, like every historian that weekend knew when it went down. And those items are being slowly processed to newspapers.com, but it'll take years before they're there. And in the meantime, the only way to get that same information is one working microfilm at the Carnegie Library.
Wow.
That's it. You can't search it in any way. You have to kind of know a date that you're going for. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the only way to get that information. And so we are trying to pick out stories that are important and tie into those conversations we're sharing so that you get that information.
Well, and I know that the museum, for lack of a better term, is so much more than just a museum, right? Mm-hmm. It's more than just a place that has a lot of artifacts. Y'all do like haunted history exhibits, I know, like summer art camps, I think, recently mm-hmm. as well. How important is it to create some fresh offerings in addition to just fresh exhibits?
It's essential. So part of it is, let's get people interested in what we want to share with them. So having a special lens on what you're doing to invite in new viewers is very important. So haunted histories, we get a lot of younger audiences mm-hmm. with this. They want to come in. They want to see the spooky fun. They want to hear these haunted tales. And then we're going to teach you history on the side. So yeah. it's a great way to capture an audience. Branch Out was our summer camp, and it's incredible. We were able to take an art camp, mix it with history. We had Passport to Art, Shipwrecked on Salier Street, and we were able to just share cultural influences with these children while they were having fun creating artwork. It's like the perfect mix. So we're always trying to find a way to serve it to our audience.
Well, speaking of capturing an audience, you have one now, right now. What's one of the haunted stories that have stuck out that's really maybe your favorite to tell, or some that have really caught the attention to those being?
We have a really fun regional one that is only specific to this area, but the ghost lights on Ellis Hill, which is on Highway 109 out towards Starks and Edgerly, mm-hmm. there are phantom lights that people see, and there have been documented cases for over 50 years. I mean, just dozens and dozens of sightings. And so we work with the paranormal team, and you know, they do a lot of research, a lot of interviews, and it's just this fascinating phenomenon. You know, is it scientific? Is it paranormal? But it's something that a lot of residents have seen in their lifetime.
That's fun, and that's not one I've ever heard of before.
Exactly.
So I really expected, you know, we often hear about, you know, like hanging jail stories or Absolutely. Tony Joe Henry or those sorts, and this is a new one for
Thank
me.
Thank you. Never heard that before. I figured I'd give you one.
You learned me something today.
You're welcome.
So, I mean, another thing, so you're bringing in people with these, like, really fresh and fun exhibits and events. But you're kind of learning from them. You're tapping in. I'm sure you're having those conversations when people come in, like, Absolutely. What do they want to see next, right?
Yes. Well, and then my favorite part of my job, mm-hmm. I love talking.
Yeah.
So when someone comes in, they always share a family story. You get to meet new people from the community. And when you're actively telling us your oral stories, we're capturing those because mm-hmm. we want to know more about our community. Like, we want to know what's important. Is there something I don't know about yet? Come tell me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all about mixing it together and learning each other.
So what's on the horizon? What's some new or upcoming events, exhibits that we need to be on the lookout for?
So we got two big upcomings. We have Sue Zimmerman's exhibit. It is Seeing Nature Through Eyes Wide Open. Mm-hmm. She is one of our local watercolor artists. And I mean, the work is phenomenal. The way she can play with light and watercolor and the details she captures, it's fantastic. That's opening on August 21st. The reception's free to come to from 6 to 8. So we'll have some, some refreshments, and the artist is going to be present. It's going to be it's going to be wonderful. It's a great way to meet people. And our other one coming up is Haunted Histories. I'm starting it a little early this year, so we're opening it in September. And then as it runs through, when you hit October, then we're going to be combining our haunted candlelight tours at night. So you'll get to see the museum in a different lighting.
That's cool.
It's so Literally. Much fun. It is yeah. so much fun.
Oh, I can't imagine. That's going to be really neat.
And look, I'm all for starting spooky season in September. Mm-hmm. If we're going to start having Christmas invade other months as well.
Absolutely.
Let's do it for Halloween.
Let's push
too.
Up Halloween. Halloween is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. mostly because of the costuming. But I love a haunted story. I love a scary story. Brady, not so much, but I don't have to, he doesn't have to come. If it's too spooky for you. Oh,
so Lord. There's no jump scares. There's nothing quite like that. It really is a fun history lesson. Yeah. We'll talk about we talk about 9 haunted locations, but we're adding in a cryptid zoology section this year. And we also talk about Victorian mourning and funeral customs. So it's a really fun mix of things.
Cryptid zoology,
yes. So I mentioned I work with some paranormal investigators.
Okay.
My husband runs Old Number 7 Society, and his last book went into creatures of the woods. So he did a lot of research on newspaper articles and stories passed down. So we're looking at unusual creatures in the forest.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite genres of things, I guess, is the mm-hmm. the Bigfoots, the Nessie monsters.
Yes.
Because sometimes it actually proves to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Look at giant squids.
Absolutely.
There for the longest time, they thought sailors were crazy, kind of like with mermaids. And then so...
Wait. Mermaids are real.
They are.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't tell me otherwise. Yes,
but giant squids proved to be very much real.
Absolutely.
And so I love that.
Thank you.
Very cool.
It's fun because some of the articles are about animals, unusual animals that were killed in the 1800s. And it's really kind of fun because we've never seen anything quite like it since.
Wow.
So.
Well, we're going to have to come to that because that sounds really interesting.
It's so much fun.
And different than what I've seen offered kind of anywhere else. So
yes.
I really think that's awesome. Also, you're doing walking tours now?
We are doing walking tours. So right now we are in the midst of our downtown walking tour. So you get to explore downtown Lake Charles. We're going to talk about some of the pioneer stories for when they're coming here. We explore the tales of 1910 and how Lake Charles flourishes after that event. So we'll be doing the downtown tours for a little bit more, switching to our haunted history tours, and then we're going to come back with some lakeshore tours after that.
Fun. Very
so
cool.
So we're going to try mixing it up so it's not the same tour over and over.
Yeah, yeah. And then you also do field trips and things like that too.
Yes, we do. Not just for schools either. We do them for retirement homes as well.
Oh, nice.
All ages. It's a great way to just get that little bit of enrichment in there. Mm-hmm. And for the school field trips, they can add on educational projects to make it more fun. And then some of our retirement homes like doing tours outside of business hours so that they get that quiet time they need to really explore.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And so speaking of kind of broadening the reach outside of just the museum, what's the connection to the Salyer Oak?
The Salyer Oak is on the property. So, she is named after the namesake of Lake Charles. Mm-hmm. So the museum is located on what was the winter home of Charles Salyer and his wife, Catherine LeBleu. And there's some fun history with there, a tale of romance gone wrong.
Oh.
And, a pirate. You got to have fun with that. And yeah, she's one of the oldest oaks in Louisiana. She is estimated to be upwards to 375 years old. She has a unique history of survival. So this oak tree is a great mirror to the community. She reflects our perseverance, our resilience. Mm-hmm. And I think that is why so many people have a connection to this tree.
You said pirate and Jill's ears perked up. She believes she has pirate blood.
Oh. No, well, no. But I am related to Catherine LeBlue. So I went back and searched, you know, through like Ancestry, right? And because my grandmother was a LeBlue. So I went back and searched, and Bartholomew LeBlue is my sixth great grandfather, I think.
Yes.
Something like that.
So, that is so cool.
So I read up on the romance gone wrong, if you will, and, you know, Jean Lafitte get in the way of things and his problems, you know.
Aren't you happy now?
Yeah. And so anyways, I didn't know that. I didn't grow up in Lake Charles. I grew up just outside. I'm from Oakdale originally, but my whole family's from Texas. So digging into all this and then finding that.
Oh my gosh,
wait a minute.
You just came back home.
How did this happen? How did I end up here, you know, in the place where apparently my family, you know, was a long, long time ago. So pretty cool. And that's the kind of stuff you can learn at the museum.
Princess yes. of Lake Charles.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I want a banner and a crown.
Okay.
We got to work on that. But the oak, okay, so going back to the oak, sorry, we got on a tangent there. The Salier oak, I mean, every year you have the lighting of the oak,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
is so special to watch.
It is. And this year, we're making it spooky.
Oh, okay.
So lighting of the oak, spirits. We are playing into the Halloween season. Lighting of the oak is going to be in October this year.
Nice.
And so instead of Christmas lights, we're going to have some more spooky lighting elements.
Okay.
Adley Cormier is going to be reading eerie tales under the tree, and we're just going to have a really holiday-inspired fun for this year.
I love that. And Adley could tell me any story, and I'm riveted by it.
Absolutely. Adley can come in, and I will cancel the rest of my day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he likes to tell a story.
He does.
Too.
He's so knowledgeable, and really the way he shares stories is, I mean, it's instant hooking.
He was great. We had him on the podcast, one of our first episodes, and I think I had to cut out so much because I wanted to keep it going, but, you know, no one's going to listen to an hour and a half long podcast.
I would.
But I wanted to have him on about Absolutely. Five or six more times because you talk one thing, you're like, okay, we really only talked about one thing because it was so fascinating. And mm-hmm. so he is truly, truly awesome. Now with the museum, it really is both a hub for culture, as we talked about, and then you mentioned art too. You guys have mm-hmm. a place for both of those. How do you see ICM, Imperial Calcasieu, in the future? How does it play into the future of Lake Charles's cultural scene?
I think with history being our past, I think art is really just a vision of our future. That's the celebration of our culture. And I think having both of those, mm-hmm. I think we're just preparing both visitors, community members, for the stage of what Lake Charles is going to become. I mean, I see us growing our art community. I see us growing, becoming a destination, honestly. Lake Charles is going up, and I think we'll play a good scene as a, like a setting scene for that. Will be a celebration of what we're accomplishing.
Clearly for those who live here, mm-hmm. call Southwest Louisiana home, you guys serve a very special purpose, kind of letting them know more about themselves. To a visitor, why would you encourage them to visit the museum?
Because we have a unique history here. When you come through, guests want to know, how did we develop? Because our development's very different than New Orleans development mm-hmm. because we didn't have the Mississippi River. We have, you know, no man's land. We have this unique period of time when we weren't governed by any country. And that brought unique histories. And I think that that appeals to people. They want to know those uniqueness. They want to know culture. We have guests who are international who come through and they want to know more about America. And they want to know specifically the people here. It's so interesting how interested they are in just knowing these different communities and groups. And I like sharing that. We get so many out-of-town visitors, and they are just some of the most attentive with history questions.
And I know you probably get this one a lot. Some of the must-sees or must-dos as part of Imperial Calcasieu, what would you say?
I would say take a docent tour. It's one thing to look through the exhibit. It's another thing to have a tour guide take you through and give you all the extras. Like I said, we're still actively rebuilding exhibits. Not everyone likes to sit there and read panels, but we like to share the tales. We like to just go back and forth. And we can take, you know, what might have been a 30-minute walkthrough. You might be there for an hour to three, you know, just depending on the day. Like, we love sharing the tales.
And to kind of to pivot here to the business side of things a little bit, but you know, how do you guys operate? You guys rely a lot on people in the community,
right?
We do,
actually, very, very much so. So we're a nonprofit, and we are run entirely on our donations, our grants, and sponsors. So we look, and memberships help incredibly. You know, community involvement is what sustains us. So
go get your membership, everyone.
Go get a membership. You can get memberships through our website. You can volunteer time for events. We love having people come out and help. If you want to explore the exhibits with us, if you want to go on tours with us or help at field trips, we love that. There's a lot of sponsorship opportunities with exhibits, with fundraisers. We have something for everybody, and we like the partnerships. We love helping out and serving how we can as well.
So whether it be sponsorships, volunteering, whatever, what's the best way for them to get in touch and figure out that?
They can go to our website, imperialcalcasieumuseum.org, or you can reach out to us at our Facebook, our Instagram, or email us. Our email is info@lcicm.org. So lots of ways. Or you can just stop in and say hi.
That always works. The old school way.
That's right. That's the easiest way to catch me.
Thanks again to Ashley for joining us on the show. But the biggest thank you of all, can you guess who it's going to be to, Jillian?
It goes out to you, the listener.
It goes out to you, the listeners. Yes. Thank you for enjoying the show and listening and getting to this point. If we can ask you to do one thing, it would please leave us a rating or review. Or I guess two things, if you would also then leave a comment, send a message, something like that. We like those too.
Yeah, let us know what you want to hear next. Of course, that always helps us grow our audience and further share the unique experiences that Lake Charles and all of Southwest Louisiana have to offer. Go to visitlakecharles.org/podcast for more episodes, advice on where to eat, and events that are happening this weekend. I'm Jillian Corder.
And I'm Brady Raynard. Thanks again for coming to play at Louisiana's Playground. See you.